I am Paige Alviniak, editorial director at Promax, and this is the Daily Brief podcast. Today, I have with me Garen van de Beek and Laura Sheffa, who have recently launched new creative agency Room 15. Hello, both of you. Thank you both so much for joining me.
Thank you, Paige.
Thanks for having us.
The good thing here is that your voices are very distinct, so we will know who is speaking. So that's great. All right. So to kick off, we're going to go back in the time machine a little bit. Just both of you give me a quick sum up of your backgrounds and then what brought you to this moment in time launching your own agency. And for this question, let me start with Garen and then I'll go to Lori.
Okay, well, first I'm Dutch. Not that you need to know that, but you know, there you go. I thought it was important. You know, if you ain't Dutch, you ain't much is what
I said.
you heard me. Anyway, it's funny, both Lori and I kind of had parallel tracks where we started in, I'm from California and started going from affiliate to affiliate. So I was in Albuquerque and then I was in a station in Michigan and then I was in Texas before coming back to LA where I worked for the Ono in LA. And then from there, I went directly to the network and kind of did pretty much every job in the marketing department. I was a writer producer and then was promoted and I started being a creative director and so on and so on. And eventually got to a place where the last 10 years I've been the executive VP of creative and I oversaw all the AV and PR and all the other departments that make up a in-house ad agency.
Quick question. So when you started at TV Affiliates, where did you start?
I started in Albuquerque. Oh, it was it was literally a promotion assistant. I mean, I was writing voiceover copy, things like that. It was like the bottom rung.
Okay. So, but you've been basically in promotions the whole time.
Yeah, that's right.
Marketing promotions. Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Lori.
It's a very similar origin story, you know, just different markets really. Right after I graduated from college, I started out at the CBS affiliate in Chattanooga, Tennessee, where I had interned the 3 summers prior. So they hired me as the promotion manager, a department of one. I didn't know what the heck that was, but I was excited. And then I went to Buffalo, New York, another CBS station, went to Dallas, Texas, CBS. I did a stint at ABC affiliate in Minneapolis. I worked at the NBC affiliate in Cincinnati, and then when I met my husband, we got married. We decided to start a family, and we decided it was time to stop hopscotching around, you know, changing markets and whatnot. So we moved to LA in 1997, and I had a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old with us. And I got a job at CBS. It was kind of the perfect job for me because I went from working at, you know, the affiliates for so many years to the network, and my job was director of affiliate on-air promotion. So I was kind of the liaison between the stations and the network. So it was like a really great kind of a bridge for me. And so I started there and worked a few years in that department, then got promoted.
And not to interrupt, but that's when Lori and I met, when she was in that job, and I was at KCBS. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So once I was inside, I got promoted, you know, just like Garen said, kind of moved my way up the ranks. And my last job there was last 10 years was a senior VP of AV working with Garen, and rest is history.
Garen, did you like moving around or were you happy when you find, I just feel like all station people have to move around like that. Did you like that or were you happy to kind of come back and settle down?
I loved it when I was young. I mean, we did most of our moving, my wife and I, when we didn't have kids. So every place that we went, we found things we've never seen. And by the way, in some cases, never have gone back to again. But it was cool because it was just so completely different. I mean, going from Albuquerque, New Mexico to a Grand Rapids, Michigan to Houston, Texas, like they're all so different. And so we were really into it and it was exciting. Then kind of like Lori in Houston, we started a family and then it was kind of like, all right, you know what? We really want to get back to the grandparents who were in Santa Barbara, California, where I'm from. And so we made the move back. And ever since then, that was a great move as well. Working in a network is incredibly challenging. And so we never got bored and it was just a great experience.
I have to say, I think starting at an affiliate level is a really great place to start. A lot of people would come to me and say, hey, how do I break into this business? I'm like, how about leaving LA and trying San Luis Obispo or a smaller market, you know?
Yeah.
And you learn so much because you get in and you get to do a lot more things as opposed to you're not ready to specialize in any one particular thing, but they let you do a lot of things. And so you learn all your different options. Because I originally wanted to be a journalist. I wanted to be the news anchor. And once I got into my internships during college, I discovered this whole other department of promotion and marketing, which I was like, well, that's really cool. I didn't even know that was a thing. My point is saying, I think it's really great to start a network affiliate, because when you get to the network, you kind of have a broader understanding of all the pieces. I mean, it is a network. A network is made up of affiliates, you know? So it's they have different needs and priorities than we did at the network. And so we had to keep that in mind and how it serviced them.
It also teaches you how to, you know, at the network, we had big budgets and we could do huge shoots and we could work with pretty much anybody we wanted to. But when you're in a place like Albuquerque, New Mexico, or you know, you're it, you're coming up with it and you're figuring it out yourself. It's really gives you an edge of whether you have a big budget or you have no budget at all. You can still be incredibly creative. It really kind of trains you to work with small projects as well as really large projects.
Do you think that's an opportunity that's still available for people coming into the business just because the network affiliate business is shifting so much?
They still are making their money off local news. And when you work at a local affiliate, you promote the local news. It still is promoted. And by the way, local news has really been kind of on fire in a good way lately.
In a good way, as opposed to many other things.
And so that newscast still needs to be promoted. And so whether they're doing special series or you're just doing generic promoting the team, et cetera, it's a great training ground.
Yeah, totally agree with that.
All right. So then what brought you guys to this moment in time launching Room 15? Then let me start with Lori.
A lot of things played into it. One of which was, you know, we left CBS after, you know, 23 years of working together. We decided it was time to move on. I have to say,
but not from each other.
Not from each other.
No.
I cannot quit him.
Do you call each other like work wife and work husband? And is this
That's
cool?
Right.
Yes. Spouses? Okay.
Yes, it's exactly. So true. Yeah. We really do love working together. And so it's been a nice kind of evolution to kind of take it on the road, if you will. And now we're working on the outside as opposed to the inside. And I actually think that's one of our best unique selling points to what we can offer our agency is that together we have over 50 years of combined experience in launching literally dozens of shows, hit shows. Mm-hmm. Like when Gary and I started back in 97, CBS was number 3. And when we left, we were celebrating our 17th out of the last 18 seasons at number 1. We left with our heads very high, feeling really good about the accomplishments. And we think that because of all that inside experience, we kind of know how to, as a vendor now on the outside, know how to communicate with, you know, streamers and networks and offer them stuff that they need because we know what's on their plates. We know what they're juggling. We know about the budget issues and the priorities and on and on and on. So I feel like not every agency might be able to say that because they come from a different sector, perhaps. But our background is pretty relevant in our way of servicing their needs.
In the last, you know, obviously the whole business has been hugely disrupted in the past few years. At CBS, you guys launched CBS All Access. And in your bios, it says that you marketed several of those shows. What did you learn at CBS over those years in working on the marketing for that platform? And what were some of the differences that you had to adjust to marketing on a streaming platform versus a linear network?
I think, first of all, when you're at a network, you have your own on air. So you have this huge platform. Right. And so you could run trailers and promos on your on air. And if it's a priority show, you're getting a lot of time. You're getting millions and millions of dollars worth of time to launch a show. On CBS All Access, when we started, it was really treated like a separate company. So it wasn't like, hey, it's CBS All Access, so you can have all the time you want on CBS. It didn't work that way. Right away, we had to look at different ways to get the word out about CBS All Access. one thing about it that was great was we really could look at it. We could do like longer form stuff that we never got to do on the network. You could do trailers. You could do BTS stuff. You could do a lot of interesting work in social and digital and things that on the network side, even 6-7 years ago when all this started for CBS All Access, we weren't really doing. For us, it was exciting you're still ultimately trying to do great creative work, no matter where it is seen. But you have to tailor it to, you know, whether it's an Instagram or Facebook or wherever you're able to be reaching out to people. And sometimes too, like we got to a point where sometimes a launch didn't even start with a trailer or anything. It started with a great idea for an activation because we wanted to get word of mouth going. You know, when we launched Star Trek Discovery, we pulled a mock spaceship over the Brooklyn Bridge. And that stuff that at the network, we weren't able to do. And then also just the subject matter of what we got to promote. It's no secret that CBS has a lot of crime procedurals. It's been very successful for them. But it was nice for us to go, okay, now we get to launch a new Star Trek. Okay, now we get to work with Jordan Peele on the new Twilight Zone. And it was great to be able to work on different things as well. But in general, I think ultimately when it comes right down to it, when you talk about streaming or when you talk about stuff that you're doing for the network, you still got to do great creative, period. Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. it. It doesn't matter where it is, what platform it's on. It still has got to be great, compelling, clear. Like we're big believers in clarity as well. We believe people mm-hmm. want to know about these shows. And so if you tease too much, people get tired of that. Ultimately, you want to sell the show and you want to sell the good parts of every show that you have.
Do you feel like that when streaming came up and also social, digital, et cetera, do you feel like that required a shift in mindset that took time? Or do you feel like as a marketer, you're sort of always looking for ways to promote? So it just sort of opened up new opportunities to you.
Laura, you want to take that?
Yeah, I know. I'm just thinking it through. It's like, yeah, I think it took a while. I think it was one of those things that it's funny when, I don't know if you remember this, Garen, but when we first started there was a group up on the roof. Do you remember those guys? They were the digital people. Nobody knew what the
they were like the cell phone people. Yeah.
Yeah. They were sitting up there. They were up there for years. And at one point
they were literally on the roof. I see these people sitting like outside on the roof. Like, we have no place for you digital people. This is where your office
pretty
is.
Pretty close.
They had an office that was off of the roof where you could walk out the door of their office and you'd actually be on the helicopter pad where they land the helicopter.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
It was just kind of this weird little space. And there was like these little cubicles and there's like 10 people in there. And none of us really knew these people. It was very mysterious. It was just like at one point, Ron Scalera, who we both used to work for years ago, he decided somebody needed to go up there and find out what these people were doing. And if we could learn from them, and I was the person that was sent up there. I would go up there and I would attend these meetings once a week just to see what was going on and report back. And then as it became clearer and clearer over the years, they're not going anywhere. And, you know, this is good stuff and we need to take advantage of it. Yeah. I mean, it was kind of an evolution. And mm-hmm. I embrace it. I love all the new stuff that you can do with social and digital, and it's so much fun to like take an idea and figure out how to make it work in a little blurb on an iPhone, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's been really fun. You know, I got into this business because I like being creative. I like being challenged. And that's the one thing you could say about this career path is you never, ever get bored. You never, you know, run out of things to do or new ways of doing them. And so I think it's been a nice kind of evolution.
I think we also benefited from the fact that when CBS All Access came around, it was kind of a slow process. It wasn't like all of a sudden, okay, you're doing the creator for CBS All Access. It was kind of this slow process that We did a little bit more. We experimented with this. All of a sudden, what used to be a Mondo shoot that most people in this business know what that means, where you're just bringing all the stars together. And normally you do it for graphic IDs and network things and promos. And all of a sudden, the shoot started becoming more, okay, we're doing digital stuff. We're doing social stuff. Where like what we did at those shoots started changing, but slowly but surely. So we would have like a social setup 1 year. And then the next year it got bigger and bigger. And before you knew it, the creative that we were doing was especially for the Star Treks of the world and the Good Fight and all those sorts of things became, we were getting stuff for digital and we were getting as much content as we could because right. you had to feed the beast. You know, it wasn't like, yeah. Hey, we got this one piece of key art and now we'll animate it. Isn't this fantastic? Well, that's great. What else do you got?
Yeah, so, I think that what you're saying, Garen, is so true. The digital and social stuff is almost more demanding in some ways because you have to keep it fresh. Yeah, every single day you have to be feeding the beast. Like you said, you can't just like produce, you know, one thing and like let it ride for 3 weeks. You know, mm-hmm. you got to keep these people engaged. So it's very challenging and demanding.
I think the other piece of that part of it, which I'm sure you guys know very well, but is that it requires tons of planning and strategizing mm-hmm. and
yeah.
knowing your yep. audience and knowing your platforms, all that stuff, which I feel like, at least when I started dealing with social, I just thought, oh, I just type a tweet and I have achieved social.
Yeah.
and mm-hmm. then you learn yeah. like, no, this is actually just like planning any marketing campaign. And it's, you know, yeah. there's some rigorous discipline to apply.
That is correct. That's correct. I mean, we definitely were, where we started, it was like, hey, look, let's put this fun. Let's put up on Instagram. And then, but when you really get into it and doing it the way you should, where you're using research, you're using mm-hmm. special right. tactics, you're going through all the analytics, you're learning about your audience, who they are, what they like, all of that are things that you have to take into account when you're putting together a campaign and putting together the creative.
So let's circle back to Room 15. So you guys named it Room 15 because that was where your office was, correct? At CBS Studio City, not Studio City, but CBS Studios.
Yeah,
it was in the basement of
TV City. We had a
television city. Yeah.
Room 15, mm-hmm. and you know, it's so sad that when COVID hit, everybody, you know, went home and started working from home, and no one's ever been back in there. So we're like, let's just take Room 15 with us, you know?
Yeah.
And it's special. It's special for us because that's where we first met and started working together. So
do you guys, so in light of everything we just talked about, you know, evolving from affiliate marketing to broadcast network marketing, which used to be like the, you had reached the pinnacle, you were at a broadcast network, but, mm-hmm. And then evolving into taking all that into digital streaming, multi-platform. So when you take all this to Room 15 and apply it to clients, what does that look like? Meaning, how do you take all that knowledge and say, okay, client, I can serve you? What is it that Room 15 brings, do you think, that other agencies might not be able to bring? And obviously you have the breadth of experience and you've marketed lots of hit shows. Is there any other thing that you guys say, this is something that we've really got to offer?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you say we marketed a lot of hit shows, I mean, I think we have a track record that in a lot of ways is unparalleled of just the number of hits that we've turned out. But I think more than anything, it's that we've had one foot in network and we've had mm-hmm. one foot in streaming. And nowadays, you have to, like, no one now at a network and they're only doing network work.
Right.
It's like you have to know both disciplines now. And so that's something that Lori and I got very comfortable doing. And just the fact that, you know, we're just used to juggling and thinking about things. And when you were talking about, hey, you really got to plan these shoots out, we're immense planners. We go through detail.
All good marketers are. Yeah.
And you just have to be. And so, you know, we would never have a shoot where somebody would walk in and go, what's going on here? Like, this is so disorganized. That was not us. We were super on top of that. And we like that process. There's chunks of the process that I like more. And there's chunks of the process that Lori likes more. Together, we kind of got it covered, from the idea generating, if there's writing that needs to be done, the writing, to the design work, to the actual shoots that go on, to the post editing. Like, there are things that I'm really into, and there are things that Lori's really into.
Are you willing to say, like, who's into what?
Sure. I mean, I started off writing. The reason I wanted to get into the business initially was because I always enjoyed writing and coming up with ideas and things like that. So I tend to, when there's writing that needs to be done, I tend to do the bulk of that.
I like to come up with a big idea, and then I go, Garen, how do we write this? And then he'll help me put it into some sense that makes sense, you know, into a script form, because that's where I think he's very good at writing. But I love all the elements in the toolkit. I love finding the perfect piece of music. I am a big music fiend. I have relationships with everybody in town. All the labels send me their stuff. I'm always listening to new music. So that's an important part of the toolkit that I like to play around in. I also love design. And so we spend a lot of time thinking about exactly how to craft it with the right graphics and the right colorization and the right transition devices. And how's the backplate going to look? And what's that logo going to, how's it going to animate in? So yeah, I like doing all the elements and bringing them together. I also love shoots. I love sitting in a room and putting together a storyboard and then watching it go from a sketch to a final piece on the air. That just makes me so happy.
I mean, in general, I tend to like the beginning part, and then after it's all shot, I love the editing part. Like, I'm okay. You know, I never, even as an executive VP at CBS, I never was not in edit bays. I love being in edit bays. I like editors. I like seeing that process. I like tweaking.
But do editors like you?
Some do and some don't.
I have a feeling I know why. Yeah, no, that's the one thing that again, circling back to your question, we are very hands-on. And I think a lot of people might find that surprising, because when you get to a level where we ended up, you might delegate a lot more. We did have a lot of wonderful creative directors who did a lot of the heavy lifting, but honestly, we were involved in every single spot that got on the air before it got on the air, every single spot.
Would you guys say you're both have executive producer natures, meaning you're both super organized and detail oriented and running around with spreadsheets, or is one of you more that person?
I think we're both really organized. I think Garen, if I could toot your horn, Garen, I think Garen's.
Oh, please do.
I think he's great at taking the long view. He's always thinking way ahead, and he's plotting. Like, where Garen would shine the brightest was during our upfront years, where, which is a massive undertaking for any network. And we would have, 22 pilots, and we'd have 3 or 4 cuts going on each pilot, 1 or 2 in-house, 2 or 3 on the outside. We'd have literally hundreds of cuts going simultaneously. It was a lot of plates, and he never would lose his cool and was very, zen about it, was able to organize and keep that on track. And I always found that very impressive.
I organized out of fear, basically, fear of failing. So yeah,
I forgot that upfronts was a thing, because this year it hasn't really been. But now I'm like, oh yeah, upfronts, what a nightmare. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
We did it this year virtually. Boy. We had to do it from home this year. We did a totally different, obviously a different kind. But for years we did the Carnegie Hall extravaganza.
Right. I've been many times. Yeah.
Yeah. And we would sit up in the opera box in the middle of the third level, literally just holding our breath that nothing would go wrong,
I was really like under a chair cowering. That's kind of where I was by then. The lack of sleep and all that. But yeah.
I feel like it always went well, truthfully. I was there the year the Who played. That was exciting.
Oh yeah. That was a good one.
I don't know. Maybe you won't have maybe a silver lining of everything is you won't have to do upfronts, but maybe you like it. I just always think we'll see what happens with upfronts going forward. That might be a thing that COVID also disrupts, but that is for another conversation another day.
But what's funny
that'd be wonderful.
We've always heard over the years that vendors would always say, this is our favorite time of the year. It's so much fun. We're like, what? So now that we're a vendor, air quoting, we maybe we'll see it in a different light. Maybe it'll just mean a lot of good work for us to work on. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
I wonder, I mean, you know, that I'm really digressing, but that upfronts have been something that for years TV execs have talked about disrupting or getting rid of or getting rid of pilot season, and they've never been able to do it just because of the nature of the business. But I wonder if COVID plus streaming and the way shows are distributed, not distributed, but, you know, the way they're premiered, you don't really have as much of a fall season now. You kind of have a year-round premiering happening. But I wonder if all of that will throw a lot of that into disarray, but that is, you know, to be seen.
On the network side, ultimately comes down to the sales department and what they feel it serves their clients best. There's still, you know, the last time I was in a discussion about this, ultimately the head of sales came back and said, "My clients love this thing. We need to do it." You know, that sort of thing. Right. We always hoped it would, you know, eventually go away. But yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, now after COVID and when things come back, it could be completely different. But the bottom line, people like to be entertained. They like to get rah-rah about things. And doing it upfront is kind of one point in time that it's like the big game and people love going and they like to see what it is. And so there's definitely an entertainment factor to it all that people still love.
I think also it could be divorced from the fall premiere portion of it, meaning that you can still do upfronts and show off your wares to advertisers, but they don't all have to premiere, you know, the last week of September. They could be, this is what our year-round premiere schedule looks like. And so,
no question about it.
I think people still want to buy at upfront prices also.
Yeah. And by the way, that's definitely in the last, you know, 3 or 4 years, that's definitely how things were going, where you would show fall stuff and then you would show mid-season stuff and they would kind of roll out.
Yeah. We're not having an upfront podcast, though.
Okay.
We will later.
Okay.
We talked to something about streaming somewhat, but one thing I wanted to follow up on about that is, I do think with linear TV, we used to call that just broadcast TV, that use your own air was the big, that was always the cardinal rule, use your own air.
Yeah.
Now, if you're a streaming service, you don't necessarily have your own air, or I don't know how helpful it is to use your own air because those people have already subscribed. So when you guys consider marketing these days, in light of that environment, what would you say is the new use your own air? I'll start with Lori.
Think about that.
I can answer right away.
All right, okay. You pick wrong every time.
You basically you use someone else's air. I mean, listen, when you watch like a football game on CBS or whatever, you're seeing ads for HBO, you're seeing ads for Showtime, you're seeing ads for Netflix, listen, people are going for wherever you can get the biggest audiences. Those streamers saying that's not important, that would be not true, because it's a critical piece of the pie for everybody still is trying to find as many eyeballs as you can. Now, depending on what the show is, obviously, if you're going after a younger audience that's not broad, it's very segmented, whatever, you're not gonna be on network television, right? But I think you've gotta be where the audience you're trying to reach are. And also it's not always about spots and content. Sometimes it's just like great activations. It's like, I remember when Game of Thrones left that big, huge skull of a dragon on a beach somewhere. I don't know where it was.
But yeah,
it's like, Ireland, like that's a great way to launch a new season. It's not a trailer. You gotta get that great trailer eventually. But doing things like that, it's amazing. And it really gets people talking. And everybody knows it's the oldest thing in the business that, you know, you want people to talk about. That's how people find out about
shows. Well, yeah, the word of mouth is one of the strongest things ever.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times have we picked a show based on what our friends have told us? Oh, you have to watch, you know. But it's also not about just promoting the premiere date. It's promoting past the premiere date. And keeping people finding it, because those shows don't go away. They only last a season and they be technically canceled, but they're still alive out there on a platform and they can still make money. So, you know, you keep promoting and promoting past. It's not like you promote a show on a network and go premiering tomorrow and then you kind of move into your topicals. No, with streaming is, you know, keep promoting, and all these different ways, other places you could put it.
And I also think with streaming, I kind of think of it like you got the Netflix of the world that would be more comparable to a network because you can find absolutely everything on it, right? Then you look at some of these other streamers and they're starting to focus more on audiences. So like, you know, you look at the Stars and they're obviously going after more women and African American audiences with the content that they're putting on. They're focusing. It's kind of like how, you know, when cable started, everybody was like, they all thought they were like a mini broadcaster, but then they started to focus on their audiences. And I think that's kind of what's happening in the streamer world. One thing that I think is a real challenge in the streaming world is when you're not doing just a show promotion, like a specific show, but you're promoting HBO, you're promoting Showtime, right, or you're promoting, right, Netflix. And those spots start looking all the same because all of a sudden it's kind of this hodgepodge of material, of shows that most people haven't seen, right? And so they kind of tend to feel the same. And I think the challenge is trying to really have an identity for your mm-hmm. streaming service mm-hmm. and being very conscious and conscientious about what kind of shows you pick up because you're after the certain market that you're going after, which of course they're doing because, you know, there's lots of brilliant people there. But I think just as a marketing person, it's interesting to watch how, you know, you started off years and years ago as having three networks and then there were more networks. And then you had a Fox that started to really go after a younger audience and the cable stations came out. And now I think it's happening to streamers.
Let me ask you, I have a follow-up question about audience, which is a little bit off, but I always have this question and I never ask it, which is, as marketers, most marketers I talk to will talk about that, like determining the audience and then marketing to that audience and figuring out different ways to reach the various audiences that you think you're wanting to reach. And my question is, does it ever make sense and you guys did this at CBS, so I'm sure they did it because you were going after a very broad audience. But I always wonder mm-hmm. if marketers take that very focused audience approach, if they inadvertently leave out audiences that might want what they're offering, but they don't know it. I just always wonder about that research. Do you think you can get too focused and miss potential audience?
I do think it happens. I think, you know, you're going on the best research that you have. And if you feel you got an angle or a hook or something that can push you further, you're going to focus on that. But that's not to say that, of course, there's lots of other people who don't fit into this little box and who might absolutely enjoy the show. And I think every right. marketing campaign and strategy person out there, they're focusing on a certain kind of demo or person based on all the research. But there's always like B plans going as well and C plans going as well, where they're trying to pull in other potential viewers as well.
And I mean, I think that goes back to what you said about advertising during the Super Bowl or the Oscars or whatever, is that's when you're trying to go ahead and throw the net wide.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Sure.
What were you going to say, Lori?
I was just thinking this is kind of related and it's really not so much about the marketing, but it begins with the show title. You know, Garen and I would frequently get frustrated because show titles can be a barrier to going mm-hmm. wide. I'll take The Good Wife, for example. One of my very favorite shows of all time on the network and now on CBS All Access is The Good Fight. But The Good Wife, a lot of men would just hear that title and go, I'm not interested. That was a huge challenge for us when we launched that show to try to appeal to a broader audience. And we had to overcome a title issue.
I agree. I agree that when I heard the title of that show, I was like, and then and to be honest, I didn't watch it, but it was critically raved about and people loved it. Like,
well, it's fantastic. Yeah. If men gave it a chance, they watched it, they quickly were like, oh my God, this is a fantastic show. There's a lot of characters here that I can really enjoy and relate to and whatever. But I feel like marketers should be a part of that conversation. It's some
There's
level
no question
in the
about
development
it.
That we should be a part of. What should we name the show that you guys then have to market?
I feel like also to really digress for a second and get micro, but that show I feel like was named after that sort of pivot point in the pilot, you know, where she has to be the good wife. But then it was like, okay, but now you've got five more seasons and so other things are going to happen. Yeah.
Well, it happens. I mean, I think when you're writing a pilot, you come up with an idea and you're writing it and you come up with what you think is the perfect title. And then you bring it to the network and the network gets excited about it. And all of a sudden, months and months have passed and it's got this title. And so it's like, yeah, of course it's The Good Wife. Marketing people come in and they kind of go, huh, I'm not sure a lot of guys are going to dig that. Or, you know, and it's kind of common sense. But sometimes the marketing people are brought into the process so late that it's kind of a done deal. They've That's cleared right. the name. They've done, you know, all this sort of thing. And or they don't have time to, you know, they've gotten so far down the road that they just don't have time to make any kind of changes. And it always becomes like a problem when you're trying to promote. Now you've got to explain what the show's about before anything else. But I have to say that in recent years for us at CBS, we were becoming more and more part of those discussions.
That's what I was going to ask you. Yeah, definitely. Another thing that you touched on that I thought was really interesting is this idea about, you know, the way streaming services are marketed with, they do a lot of, you're right, those brand spots where they show off a lot of shows, which I happen to love those kind of spots, but you're also right in that they look pretty alike. So I wonder, it'll be interesting going forward to see how these streaming services start to lean into whatever their brand is. Because I feel like right now, at least the big ones, it's just these originals that don't really have necessarily a through line and then whatever their library is.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that Garen and I have always subscribed to is that people watch shows. They don't watch networks. They watch shows. So wherever that show is that they like, they're going to find it and they're going to watch it. It doesn't matter where it is. It's just, you got to make sure people know where it is. But I agree. A lot of these branding campaigns are very, very similar. I find them confusing because they're trying to sometimes put too much stuff into a spot. It's a little tough to follow and keep it all straight.
And sometimes it seems like they've got to be good to all their babies in a way.
Yeah.
So you have two things that you totally know about. And then you got five things that you're going like, what's that show? Right. And often they don't even put up the title of the show. And you're kind of going like, all right, well, that looked like cool footage, but I don't know any more about it, you know? Yeah.
A lot of times too, it's like, here's some original shows and some original movies and some library movies. I find that kind of confusing. Yeah. Like, what's this from? I feel like I actually kind of watch brands. Like, I won't say which ones, just in the interest of trying to be an objective person, but I do tend to like, if it's on this service, brand, whatever, I am more likely to check it out.
Because they have a rotation of giving you quality things, right?
Right. And I've enjoyed things on there before, or I enjoy their take, or I enjoy their approach, or I feel like this is like, I relate to this brand as opposed to, I don't know, some other brand. But anyway, neither here nor there.
Well, like I said, people watch brands, not shows. I'm joking.
So you guys launched, obviously, in the time of pandemic. I feel like there's pros and cons with that. So what's been your experience so far launching this new agency in this time where you probably are both working from home, so you're assembling everything virtually? What has that meant so far?
First of all, it's terrifying, of course, but it's exciting. And some of the advantages of it is, number one, because we're all Zooming, Lori and I can do a lot of meetings throughout the day, meeting with potential clients,
Hooray.
As opposed to driving here and driving there. And, you know, before the podcast, we were talking about traffic. Well, that actually is really great, like being able to kind of go, okay, we'll do a meeting at 9, then we'll do one at 10, and then we'll do one at 11.
Right.
And so you can talk to a lot more people in a shorter amount of time. That's definitely a bonus. I think the biggest bonus is that there's a ton of really good people out there right now who aren't working for companies. You know, there have been major layoffs going on. Like,
that's a pro and a con, but
But I'm talking about for an agency, for us, to, who we're after the best talent out there. you know, not only because of how many years we've been doing this and we've been working with freelancers, even though we had an in-house agency, we worked with tons of freelancers in our career. They're people that we know can deliver, that people that we can trust. They're all out there still. We've been working with them already. It's been great. There's a lot of new people that we would have had a chance to work with. You know, they would have been at a competitor or whatever. And now we're connecting with people like that. And that's been a plus. You're right. You know, I don't want to make it sound like, oh, it's so great, everybody's getting laid off. But from an agency standpoint that's starting during COVID, we have a really great talent pool that we're accessing.
Well, and good. I'm glad that you're giving people work. That's great.
Yeah.
You guys, since you ran what you're calling an in-house agency, do you feel like that then applies to Room 15? Like, you already have a model in place. It's not within a network, but you already have a sense of what the structure looks like and the process and all those sort of logistical details.
The process is kind of the process. I don't think we'll change our process from be given an assignment, be given a project. We take it from the beginning to the very end. The process will probably, some of the mechanics of it have to change because we're working in such a bizarre way through virtual circumstances. But yeah, I think the process is always going to be the same for us and how we approach each project from the very beginning. We don't have data in-house. Like at CBS, we had a big research department. We would have strategy and, you know, research meetings, and we'd get information, and then we base all of our creative and concepting kind of within a certain framework. We don't have that in-house right now, so that's going to have to change. What we'll end up doing maybe eventually is adding that, but as we start small, we are working with clients who have those in-house anyway. We'll work with those groups to get their direction and then take it from there.
But yeah, that was one of my questions, is how you're going to handle data, but mostly work with clients with their data at this point.
Most of our clients will have that, and we'll certainly work in tandem with them. But at the end of the day, I always come down on if everything is equal in strategy and in creative, I'll always say that creative should lead the way, because I don't think all the AI and focus group testing can ever tell you exactly what's appropriate creatively. You have to elicit an emotion from the viewer. You know, we're trying to get chill bumps. We're trying to get someone to laugh. We're trying to get someone to be motivated to watch a TV show or buy a pair of tennis shoes. And so if the spot doesn't move you in some emotional way, then it's failed. And all the strategy in the world will not get you there. The creative will get you there. And I'm a big proponent of that. At the end of the day, the strategy may go, well, that doesn't really work with the focus group in Las Vegas as well as this spot, but hey, did they laugh? Yeah, they laughed. Well, then that's what we won with that, right?
I think probably the biggest challenge for all of us in creative is the fact that you can't have those creative meetings face to face where you're in the hallway and you're going, you know, somebody says something and then you go, oh, that reminds me of this. And then you get onto this whole other thing. And all of a sudden there's an idea that's born out of that. That's hard for everybody. It just isn't happening that way right now. That is going to be probably the main reason that people will want to go back once it's safe, because it's great not having to fight traffic, and it's great being able to do all these quick meetings. But ultimately, you got to have those interchanges going on, because no single person has all the answers. And it's like you go in with one thought and it becomes this thought and becomes something else. And all of a sudden you have truly an original idea that no one by themselves would have thought of. That's what I think people are hurting right now, you know, and really are missing and want back. Yeah. Yeah.
Some of our best ideas would come out of like, hey, let's all go, you know, walk 5 minutes over to the Grove to get some coffee, or let's do a quick power walk around the building kind of thing. And, you know, that's when those little off the cuff little conversations would come up, and you come up with this great idea. You can't do that over Zoom. You can't plan that.
It might be early to ask this question, so feel free to punt if you would like, but what, you know, as far as you're looking out, what does the team look like? Are you going to be doing, do you plan to have a lot of in-house talent, or do you plan mostly to sort of go project by project and contract, or what is that looking like?
I think we're starting out small, and we'll add staff as needed. I mean, right now, you know, we don't need anyone. We have some projects going on, but they're not taxing us too much. We have the outside folks that we rely on to help us with it. We're just going to take it slow. The last thing we want to do is like jump in and hire a bunch of people, then not have the work. We're kind of taking baby steps.
And I think what you said about the fact that we ran an in-house agency, we kind of know all the parts and pieces that you need to get things done. Right. It doesn't mean they all need to be employees.
I mean, don't you think that will be sort of part of the new model that emerges from this, which is more of that? I mean, the gig economy was already happening. I feel like we'll see more of that sort of flexible workforce plus remote working, you know, a hybrid to the office. And I think all of that is largely good. Personally.
Absolutely. I mean, we have I have a lot of friends who were working for us at CBS. And now, you know, one of them's up in Oregon and someone's out, you know, out wherever. And all the work's getting done and they're happier and their families are happier. Lori and I used to really be kind of strict about, hey, we like to have our creative directors here in the building because we like to run into you in the hallway. And we like to talk. And when we want to do a quick brainstorm session, we don't want to have to like, oh, you know, let's get you on the Zoom and let's do this and all this sort of thing. But as we've been going through this process, you kind of understand, like, you know what? It does kind of work. I think ultimately it's going to be a mixture.
I think so, too. Beyond entertainment marketing, just like pie in the sky, if you could do other sorts of things, what kinds of projects would you guys like to do?
I know a couple of things I love. There's two things I love.
Well, music,
so much.
Obviously.
Music is one of them. You're right. Thanks for listening.
but by the way, it's not like I don't love music. I just want to be clear about that. I love music too.
Yes, he likes music too. But I would love to. I love to work on music videos because they're the ultimate in creativity. You just have to be crazy creative, and those are awesome. I would love to get into that. And I also love fashion. I wouldn't mind working with some brands in the fashion industry and helping them create content for whatever. I think that'd be fun. I also wouldn't say no to political ads. I know we're kind of at the end of the political season right now, but I have seen a lot of really cool,
really,
you know, very clever, very creative political advertising.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I think so. Does that also say, Lori, that you guys would do, I apologize. I forgot to tell you guys about the fact that I have dogs anyway, that you guys would do some more like content marketing or brand integrations or thing, you know, like a music video or some kind of fashion video? It wouldn't necessarily be a pure marketing piece. It might be like a little film or, you know, there's, you know, digital short. There's lots of different options to do this.
All of it.
Absolutely.
All of it. And count me in on all of it. It's all creative content. And that's what we're all about.
Okay. I think, absolutely. I think it's kind of cool. You know, I guess the plus of not being in a network system is we can open ourselves up to a lot of things that we never were able to do. That's the exciting part, that, we love launching shows. We know how to launch shows. We've got a great track record launching shows. But it'd be so cool to be able to do other things that we haven't done yet. So we're open.
Okay, that's a good place to wrap it up. But I agree, like, it's a stressful time, but in some ways it's a super exciting time because there's so many platforms, there's so much creative, there's so much opportunity. Yeah. All right. Well, both of you, thank you so very much for being on. I love chatting with you. And I wish you I don't know if luck's the right word. I wish you tons of work and creativity and innovation as you get off and going with Room 15.
Thanks, Paige.
Really appreciate it.
Yep. It was my pleasure. Bye, you guys.
Bye.
That's it for this episode of the Daily Brief podcast. If you have suggestions for conversations, please reach out to us on Facebook and LinkedIn at Promax Global or on Instagram and Twitter at Promax_Global. You can also email us at dailybrief@promax.org, and you can subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on Apple Podcasts, where you can also rate and review us, or on Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And as always, thanks for listening.